Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
And welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. This is our weekly program covering arts and arts events in Valparaiso and throughout Northwest Indiana. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Our theme music you heard is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Underwriters for Art on the Air are Valparaiso University's Brower Museum, regional art patron Mary Levan, and our landlord, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. If you'd like to find out more about leasing space in this historic building, please give Walt a call, 219-462-5821. We'd like to thank them for their generous support. Thanks to Greg Kovach, WVLP's station manager. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant through South Shore Arts and is part of the National Endowment for the Arts. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. That's artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. Our program, along with all of our programs, are streaming live at wvlp.org. Art on the Air is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m. Our entire show archive can be heard at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. You'll also find our detailed arts calendar at breck.com/AOTA. Our shows are carried by Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., and you can hear them at lakeshorepublicradio.org. And make sure to like us on our Facebook page, Art on the Air, WVLP. Art on the Air is always looking for financial support. We'd like to thank our current supporters. If you're looking to support Art on the Air and, of course, the WVLP station, we'd be happy to become part of the WVLP family anytime. Esther and I especially would invite you to become an underwriter of this program in particular. We have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA. You can find out support information there or at wvlp.org/support. We have underwriter levels at various levels. You can support us. We'll mention you during our show and throughout the WVLP broadcast day. You know, we encourage you to become part of a supporter because we are supported by our listeners. So don't just be a WVLP and Art on the Air listener. Become a supporter or underwriter in whatever amount you're able to do so we continue to bring you this great content and this great local programming. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. And you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air and the whole WVLP family. Join the WVLP family today. And our guest now is Chris Guzman of Guzman Gloves, also a teacher and artist. Welcome him to Art in the Air. So welcome, Chris.
Aloha, Chris.
Hello, everybody. How's everyone today?
We're doing great. How are you doing?
It's a good day.
It is a good day. Oh, air in our lungs. That's all we need.
That's true. Well, tell us a little bit about your background, Chris. You know, where you grew up, where you went to school, both high school, college, and kind of what you're doing now.
Well, first of all, Larry and Esther, thank you for having me on. I'm a fan of the show, and it's really cool to be part of the show today.
And I'm a fan of your work, too. I've been watching it for a while, so this is exciting.
Oh, thank you for the kindness. That's sweet of you. Well, I'm Chris Guzman. I was born in Gary, Indiana. My dad was a Gary police officer for a number of years.
Chris, when did he serve as a police officer? What years?
What years? I wish I had that information in front of me. In the, 70s.
Okay.
70s through the very early 80s. I believe he was on about 14 years. Oh, okay. All right. Well, I'm sure you might cross some paths, Bill and Gary being so near.
That's true. Well, anyway, tell us about your background.
Okay. Well, I was born in Gary, but I was raised in Hobart. We lived in Gary on Van Buren Street for about my first year. So in 1976, we moved to Hobart, and I am a Hobart graduate. Lived in Hobart for all my formative years that I can imagine. Hobart Middle School, Hobart High School, Took every art class available at Hobart High School. I think my senior year, I had about 4 art classes, a study hall, and a couple of miscellaneous classes. I was in the art room all day my senior year.
As it should be.
As it should be. No, I was just a creature in my natural habitat. My art teacher at the time, Mr. Dale Marcus, he must have gotten tired of me by the end. I was just always there. I was always asking, can I paint a mural here? Can I hang up something here? Is there anything you need me to do for you? What can I do in the art room? I don't want to be anywhere else in the building. But, I mean, that's how that went.
So did you gravitate mostly toward drawing and painting then, or did you also do all the other things, ceramics and...
It was pretty immersive. I did pretty much everything that was offered. I always landed on my feet with illustration. Was always where I ended up. I enjoyed painting, but I never knew I would end up being a portrait artist. I mean, good Lord, that was the furthest thing from... most of my portraits in high school were horrendous. colored pencil, maybe a little bit of watercolor. I mean, I was terrible at it. So if you'd have told me when I was 17 that I was going to be a professional portrait artist, on boxing gloves, no less, I'd have said, okay, well, you have a fever. There's something wrong with you. I would never have believed that. So I mean, it's a twisted road that we follow. I got a couple of really generous art scholarships out of high school and ended up at the American Academy of Art in downtown Chicago, right there in the Loop. And that was, I mean, for a little Hobart boy, to go to the big city every day on the South Shore, that was an eye-opening experience. It changed everything. It changed everything. I was going to go into advertising. I was going to be a big, bad art director. I was going to get an apartment in the Loop. All these things. Everything was lining up for me. And I did work in advertising for a while, for a little bit, but I knew I wanted to be a teacher. Time, when I was 19, I mean, being a teacher was something you fall back on. It's not something you do when you're 19. It's not something you plan for when you're 19.
Well, in elementary school is so brilliant. Is that where you started, was teaching elementary, or are you just there now?
No, Esther. I started teaching at Andrean High School in Maryville. In 1997 was my first year. I was 22 years old, and I was teaching 17 and 18-year-olds. I was teaching people that were only a few years younger than I am. Which explains some of the friendships that I cherish to this day are students that I taught, couples that met in my classroom. I'm godfather to some of their children. It's a very, very strange road that I followed. And I don't know, I was used as an example a lot after American Academy, I went to Calumet College of St. Joseph's. Well, in Hammond or in Whiting, depending on who you ask.
I've heard that debate. It's actually technically in Hammond, but they have a Whiting address, mailing address.
I always thought I went to college in Whiting. I told people for years I was in Whiting. And then I saw that it was physically in Hammond. So I was like, okay, well, I don't know where I went to college. My degree's good, though. That's what I know.
So then you were at Andrean for a few years and also, I think, did what, Boys and Girls Club after that?
I did Andrean for a lot of subbing the first year, and then it became 4 years solid at Andrean. Left there because I met the woman I was going to marry, Angie. I was sure of it. The day I met her, I said, I'm marrying this woman. But
so
I also knew that.
Where did you meet?
I met Angie at a party, just a random party. It was kind of a setup. I didn't really know I was being set up. I didn't really know it was going to go that way. But I knew it. I knew it that moment. And everyone calls me a liar. Oh, you're a romantic. You didn't really think that. I did. My hand to God, I did. But I knew that there was no way I was ever going to get to marry her, making my $17,900 a year at Andrean. So I left there and took a giant pay cut, because that's what you do. You go take a giant pay cut, and you go to Boys and Girls Club. Go to the Boys and Girls Club, and I ran the art and drama department at Boys and Girls Club, Lake Station, Indiana, for 1 year, while I was putting out resumes. And that's when Gary Public Schools came calling, and if I'm not mistaken, I'm in my 19th year right now with Gary.
Wow. Hey, when you were saying you did theater, what kind of shows did you do?
I directed two dramatic comedies at Andrean. I did The Nerd.
Okay.
I directed The Nerd, which was absolutely hysterical. And I directed a pretty obscure one called Done to Death.
Oh, I know Done to Death.
Street comedy.
That's one of my favorites.
No one knows. I obviously, Larry Breckner would know that show.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's one
Your average Joe on the street.
I love Fred Carmichael's shows. They are just absolutely, and especially Done to Death, it's just awesome. I love that show.
And you don't have to change sets.
No, well, yeah, fix that show.
The set stayed exactly the same because that's part of the story. We added some things. We added a technical crew, CREW and then CROO, and they were actors pretending to be the crew. And it just, I hope Carmichael didn't mind that we took a little liberty. But those were the good old days. That was a good time in the very, very early 2000s.
Well, we know that you are part of the thing that one of your art things is that you're an autograph hound. So first tell us a little bit about, going out and grabbing autographs.
Oh, my entire life, if I knew a celebrity was anywhere, I wanted to meet them. I told my friends for weeks that I was going to meet Wizzo the Clown, who turned out to be Marshall Brodeen,
right?
From the classic from WGN from the Bozo Circus. But the Ace Hardware in Hobart was going to have a grand opening, and they were going to have Wizzo there. And I told my friends for weeks I was going to meet Wizzo. Got there and got a little 8x10 photo signed of him, and I was bitten by the bug immediately right there. Anytime I knew a celebrity was going to be somewhere, I was like 8 years old, and I'm like, I love when celebrities write their names for me. It was great. School, I showed everyone.
Did you ever buy any of his magic cards, Marshall Brodeen's magic cards?
They were $12.99, and I bought them off of WGN. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I remember.
I'm sure I used some Christmas money for that or something. I'm not sure.
So when did the boxing gloves come into play then? Because it certainly is an eye-catching way to have somebody come over and take a look and sign their name.
It is strange. Well, I was involved with the International Boxing Hall of Fame in Canastota, New York for two decades at least, where they enshrine all the greatest boxers and fighters in the world. And I was chasing all the fighters. I'm a lifelong boxing fan. My dad, John Guzman, who's no longer with us, he instilled boxing. It was the only sport I ever really, really cared about. So I'd go to the Hall of Fame every year and I would chase these fighters all over town because there would be 40 or 50 of them flown in for the event. And I'm everywhere. I've got a bag of boxing gloves, a bag of posters and books and photos. And I'm miscellaneous. I'm having them sign anything, even a Burger King napkin. I didn't care. I just wanted their signature in one way or another, but I wasn't standing out. I wasn't special. I was just another dude in the crowd. And that is where I decided, because I was having them sign these blank boxing gloves. And I said, well, it was my dad that actually said, you can draw, you can paint. Why don't you paint Muhammad Ali's face on the glove and then have him sign it?
Yeah,
paint
wow.
Mike Tyson's face on the glove and then have him sign it. And it became a challenge. I'm like, well, I'm not a portrait artist. Let me try. And the first few were, I would never show them to anyone. But slowly they got better. And that's what I started doing. I started chasing them down. And I'll tell you what, I mean, you have a glove with someone's face painted on it, it absolutely stops the show.
Do they want to then usually purchase it?
Well,
or commission?
Lots of people enjoy gifts. It's our human nature. We love getting things for free. So I would position myself at the front of any crowd up against a barricade, and the fighter comes on out of the dressing room or wherever, and I stick it out there, and they come right to me. I don't have to chase anyone anymore. So it became a vehicle for me to get more autographs. But yes, if it was someone that was really difficult, like I remember a year that Lennox Lewis, the former multi-time heavyweight champion of the world, he was being bombarded with everyone. I painted two gloves of him and told security I would give him one if he would come out and sign the other one. And that got it done. Then I really saw the potential to this really odd hobby of mine.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
The boxing gloves took a real turn when I stopped worrying about just boxers. A good friend of mine, Justin Tillich, called me one day and he says, all right, you're painting all these fighters. You got all these signed gloves with painted faces. Very, very nice. And any boxing fan would like that. But Harrison Ford, is going to be in Chicago next week, he said. You should paint him on one of your happy little gloves, and you should go to the red carpet and try to get him to sign it. And I said, dude, that is stupid. That makes no sense whatsoever. I'm laughing. I'm like, that's ignorant. What possible point is there in having someone that has nothing to do with boxing paint him on a boxing glove? But he said, just do it. It's so weird. No one else will have one. Use what you've learned from the boxing autograph. Apply that over to celebrities. So I did. I painted him as Indiana Jones, and I stuck it out there on the red carpet, and he came over, and we had a little conversation, and he autographed it for me. And I kind of floated home. I couldn't believe it. And then the following week, Peter Fonda was going to be appearing in a Schaumburg, I believe, Naperville, at a theater doing a signing. So I went and I painted him on an Easy Rider glove on a motorcycle, and it just still hasn't stopped. Larry, I have a sickness.
It's a unique talent. I mean, it's a unique thing. What an interesting canvas to use. And it looks like you've had several other celebrities that are non-boxing that you've done.
More than several.
Yeah.
Ask my wife. My studio is presently about 400 gloves.
Are they mostly for collection for you, or if someone wants to purchase them, can they do that?
They are for sale. Some of my, like, you ask about the odd stories. I had Sylvester Stallone sign one in 2011 at his Hall of Fame induction, because he was inducted into the Boxing Hall of Fame as an observer of the sport, not as an athlete. But he signed one for me. I had his face from Rocky III painted on it. And then since we take the toll road, because we drive, you have to drive right past Philly on the way home from New York to get back to Valparaiso. It said, pull the car. We're going to Philly. And I'm running the steps. So I put the glove on that Stallone had signed the night before on my right hand, and then ran the steps of the Philadelphia Art Museum, which is
quite a memory.
Right out of the movie. That is I call that a dork level 10 moment. That is caliber, yeah. I needed oxygen by the time I got up there, but it was a great time.
Do you do commissions? Like if somebody wants to their own portrait, can they say, hey, I'd like to have my portrait done?
All the time. Thank you for asking. Yes, I paint anything anyone has ever dreamed of on a boxing glove. Everyone's got an uncle that boxed in the Navy or in the Marine Corps or something. I've done breast cancer drives and survivors, and then unfortunately those that we've lost to that horrible soldiers that we've lost in combat have been painted on boxing gloves. It's just such a unique item. Plus, there's an Everlast, to give them a shameless plug, there's an Everlast patch on it, which just speaks to the spirit of the person that I'm painting on it. Like I said, we lost my father 2 years ago. I've got two gloves of his face up in our living room, and it's just beaming the word Everlast. I mean, you really can't beat that for branding.
Is Everlast a supporter?
Yeah, I was going to say, is Everlast ever, have you contacted them and say, look at what I'm doing? They might be interested in helping you with this.
Well, I'm not going to name names, but at the time, the CEO president of Everlast owned a Muhammad Ali glove that I painted, and it was on his desk for years. I don't believe he's the CEO anymore, but he came by my table at the Boxing Hall of Fame and saw what I was doing, gave me card, and I just sent it to him, and he sent me a picture of it on his desk. But I need to mention, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, I've been the official artist for the Bare Knuckle Boxing Hall of Fame in Belfast, New York. Scott Burt, a very good friend of mine, runs that, and it's the official Barnes. It's the Barnes that John L. Sullivan trained in back in 1889 for his 75-round fight with Jake Kilrain. So that has given me plenty of exposure. And I paint all their fighters on gloves. So we have a big induction every summer in Belfast, New York as well. And those folks have all become family. So it's just become...
You've done a lot
avenue,
of rock...
I'm sorry?
No, you've done a lot of rock and roll, too. So do you travel to concerts, or are they mostly when people come through?
I do go. Absolutely. Slash, the guitar player for Guns N' Roses, owns one. Because I painted too, and I showed up at the meet and greet and told them politely, I don't have the $250 ticket for the meet and greet, but I do have this, and it's a gift for him. And he came on out, and he signed it, and he said, without all the expletives, he said, no one ever gives me anything. He people take from me all day. This is Slash telling me. People take from me all day. It's nice to get a gift once in a while. So, yeah, I'll sign that for you. And he carried the one I gave him around like a baby while he signed others.
Excellent.
Charlie Sheen was an awesome story.
How did you, the week before. So how did you meet Cyndi Lauper?
Cyndi Lauper did an impromptu. I can't really use the word impromptu. I knew it was going to happen, but I knew a day before. I knew one day before, so I stayed up all night painting her. It was at a tiny little recording studio in downtown Chicago. She was doing a promotion for Kinky Boots, for the musical that she is affiliated with.
Yes.
And this was, good Lord, this had to be 8 years ago, maybe 10 years ago. And she was there, and she kissed me on the cheek, and she said, "Never before have I ever." And she just left her sentence at that. It's not something you see. You just don't see faces painted on boxing gloves. So, I don't know. It's a conversation starter. It gets people relaxed because it's something they haven't seen before. And it takes a lot of pressure off you having to start a conversation. You just show it to them, and they're like, "Whoa, where did you get that thing?" And then I say, "Well, I painted it." "You painted that? Why would you do such a thing? Oh, that's so cool."
And
would
it's
you
completely
sign it for
unique.
Me? Yes, of course. It's weird. It's weird, I'll tell you that. If you ever want to have a weird conversation with someone, walk up to someone that has nothing to do with the world of boxing and have them autograph a picture of themselves on a boxing glove. That is weird.
Chris, have you thought about pursuing any portraits off boxing gloves? Have you decided, you know, you've done this and you continue to do it, but, you know, say, well, you know, I could also do canvas or something else. Have you thought about doing anything like that?
I do maybe 10 canvases a year. Canvases seem a little stagnant to me. A boxing glove can be carried around a room very easily. And they tend to be the gloves tend to be the star of the show of any man cave or memorial setting, a little altar or up on a...
Sure. It becomes a sculpture.
Up on a fireplace. Yeah, it's a sculpture that I'm in partnership with Everlast. But yes, I do 8 to 10 canvases a year. Like for the Boxing Hall of Fame, I always do one or two. And then the last couple of years, I've been taking old magazines. Because, I mean, I have to do weird canvases. Boxing gloves aren't weird enough. I take old magazines that would otherwise get thrown away, and I paint portraits directly on old magazines. And that's when I stopped being just Guzman Gloves LLC, and now I'm Punchy Pop Portraits, which involves the Guzman Gloves as well. But now I'm painting on anything vintage. I just did a Ghostbusters run of old Ghostbusters magazines from 84, painting the different characters directly on there.
See, I really like them, and I think if I remember right, didn't I see something on a cracker box or something? I can't remember what box it was, but you paint on just anything, really, and the juxtaposition of, you know, the portrait against whatever you're choosing to paint on is just so wonderful.
Oh, thank you. That's kind of you. I paint in black and white. So if I have something really loud and colorful, like a bright red boxing glove or a Golden Grahams cereal box or an Eggo waffle box, because there was a show a few years ago that came out. It's all 80s retro. It's called Stranger Things. So I've been painting the characters of Stranger Things on Eggo boxes and, you know, video game boxes. I'll go on eBay and find vintage boxes, deconstruct the box, and use that as my canvas.
Chris, I noticed lately, too, that you're involved with, you mentioned Ghostbusters, but you're also, there's a whole bunch of Ghostbuster artist things. Tell us a little bit about that. I see all the posts on Facebook, and you guys are all kind of doing a whole bunch of artists are participating in that.
I started a page called The Art of the Ghostbusters, and it's just a place to not argue about whether you liked this film or not, or who your favorite characters are. It's just about the visuals. So whether it's blueprints for the Ecto-1, or models of Slimer or of Stay Puft or of the proton packs they wear on their back, or the alternative posters. There is a wealth of alternative posters and fan art out there for all these favorite movies. I mean, there's the official posters, and lots of people collect those, and that's all great. The alternative posters are what I'm excited about, and the fan art. I consider myself a fan art, but at my core, I'm a pop artist. Lichtenstein and Warhol and Herring, those are my heroes. But when you talk about alternative art, good Lord, there's just so much out there. So I started this page to try and get that all in one spot, so you don't have to go chase it on 15 different sites. It's all in one spot, And we actually have some of the celebrities that are in the official, the original 84 movie are actually on the page and commenting. Billy Bryan was the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. He designed it, made the costume, wore the costume in the movie, and is now on Facebook interacting with his fans. Anytime I post a Stay Puft painting, he's on it. He's on it talking about it. He's answering questions. It's I don't know. The interwebs, they're a strange thing.
That's your new pursuit. Hey, looking down the road, first of all, we'd like to get your web address for that and to get to you. So tell us, first of all, how someone can look up your – so give us those web addresses.
On my Instagram, you can get me at boxing.glove.artist. Just boxing glove artist separated by periods. So at boxing.glove.artist. Also, my email is guzmangloves@yahoo.com. Guzman Gloves, all one word. I'm all over Facebook. I've got a Guzman Gloves LLC page that's still up. Flip this in, because I'm a public school teacher and we're all sequestered, I've started a new page called Mr. Guzman's Art Studio, where I'm drawing with the students right on YouTube. So you can find that on YouTube. And I just dropped two new episodes this morning, actually.
We have about 2 minutes left, but give us a wrap up of how COVID-19 is working for you in terms of teaching and personally, and any future project you have.
How is COVID-19 affecting me? Well, brought me closer with my wife and my mother-in-law, who I live with here in Valparaiso, because we're in each other's face all day. We're it's a good sized house, but I mean, you're not leaving the house every day. So it is a very, very different. I mean, we're cooking every day. I'm finding myself eating way more than I used to. I'm kind of known for cooking on top of all the art, but I'm eating way more. So I need to fix that. But teaching my students online is just so different. I'm very hands on with my teaching style. Doing it on video is fun, but I'd rather be in the classroom.
Yeah, I understand the hands-on thing. Any final quick thoughts here, Chris?
I can't wait to see how we come out of all of this. I hope we come out better. I see everyone say, oh, can't wait for things to get back to normal. I'm done with back to normal. I want things better when we come out of this. Back to normal, we weren't doing all that great as a country. I think we can come out of this better. I think we'll hug a little tighter, and we'll just enjoy each other's company all that much more.
Well, I hope so, too. Well, thank you so much for being on there. That was Chris Guzman, Guzman Gloves. You can get in touch with him directly at guzmangloves@yahoo.com. You can find him on Instagram. Chris, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Chris.
Esther, Larry, it's been a pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. And we continue on Art in the Air. We have Laurel Eisert here. She's an artist, a fiber artist, doing many things in Michigan City. And she's an award-winning artist with numerous exhibitions. Name. Welcome to the show.
Hello, hello.
Oh, thank you.
Greetings. Good to hear both of you.
Well, great to hear you. Well, first of all, tell us a little bit about your background that our audience would like to hear, like where you grew up. I always like to say how you got from where you were to where you are now.
Sure. Well, I grew up in a family artist, so, for me, making art and seeing art on the walls all the time was just natural. I thought everybody had original art in their walls. Little did I know. My parents died when I was young, so I ended up moving around a lot, and so I went to high school in Huntley, Illinois, which at the time was just this tiny farm town of 1,400, which is it's exploded with expansion now. And then I went to college, an undergrad at Northern Illinois University, where I got a major in anthropology, major in art, and then a minor in art history. So I liked college. and then I went to University of Wisconsin-Madison, majored in kind of MFA in ceramics. And that's where I met my husband, Edwin Shelton.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so you were in school together and grad school together.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Excellent.
Was he doing ceramics at the time?
No, he was in sculpture, but we were basically kitty corner studio-wise. So that was nice. And it was like a smaller department. The painting department was huge. And, the 3D was quite small. So it was nice. It was easier to, I think, kind of just hang out with people. So we got out of graduate school, and Edwin's from Richmond, Virginia, so we both moved there. And I, you know what, it's like I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll get out of school, and I'm going to be a bartender, and that's how I'm going to support making art. Well, I got to Richmond, Virginia, and it was like an, you know, the state controlled liquor licenses, so it wasn't like, you know, your neighborhood bar. So I had to rethink my strategy there. So I actually ended up starting a business called Edwin. And so it was a combination of our names. I was Is for my last name, and then, you know, used the Win from Edwin. And at the beginning, is it was pretty much always ceramics. And it started out, we did, I've got a little bit of everything. You know, we did jewelry, and I don't know, it was mostly jewelry. And then we also had a year, or we had a half a year in Paris, and that was pretty interesting. And then we moved to Chicago.
What was interesting? What did you do
in Paris? We got there, for one thing, it was a special program for art professors, and certain colleges had, like, were promised these studio apartments in this building in Paris. It was built in the Malraux district that had been trashed by the Nazis during World War II, and so this couple, who happened to be part of the French Resistance, were able to build this building. It was, you know, like typical late 50s, early 60s architecture. And it was filled with these apartments. It was like a part studio, like a small sleeping area, really tiny kitchen and bathroom. And people could stay up there. I mean, I think some people were there for up to 2 years. Wow. It would have made me crazy. But so this guy that was, I don't know, I didn't even know how he made the connection, but everyone was teaching at, yes, thank you, Virginia Commonwealth University, my line. And they had an option, and this guy couldn't make it for some reason. I don't think he got it. His sabbatical didn't come through. So we had the opportunity to be there, and it was amazing. So it was like $150 a month to stay in downtown Paris. I mean, we were like kitty corner from Notre Dame, and it's just amazing. Wow. And I mean, we spent, you know, we just spend a lot of time just going to museums and still didn't see everything. So that was very amazing and interesting. And then we came back and ended up moving to Chicago. And so we lived there for 6 years, and then we moved to Michigan City.
So that's how you got around everything. And then how did you guys end up teaching, both of you?
Well, that's a long story. So we had this business name, Edwin, as I said, and we had it for 23 years. And we, you know, there'd be times when it was really going well, and then there'd be some kind of blip in the economy. And then we started out doing jewelry, and then there was a blip. And so then we started doing tabletop. Which, you know, we were making butter dishes, mugs, and stuff like that. And then 9/11 happened, and that just, our business just, it like died overnight. It was hard, you know, because we had a very strong buy-in to our business. And, you know, we had a great relationship with our employees, and we had to let go of our last employee. It was just heartbreaking. And yet, you know, sort of like rising out of that, like phoenixes, that's how we ended up going into teaching. So I'll let Edwin tell his trajectory. But I was doing workshops and stuff like that. And then Edwin found a position that it was like a full-time sub at Marquette Catholic High School. And so I got in there and started subbing, and I realized this is where I need to be. So I went back and got my teacher qualifications, and that was kind of a balance because I was teaching full-time and going to college full-time, and I decided, all right, if you can do this, you can work full-time and make art. So, you know, once I got done with my degree, I just started making quite a bit of art and never really looked back. So we had Iswin, you know, we were making cups and things like that and decorative items. You know, I always made sculpture or something on the side, but not quite as, you know, intently as I, you know, did as I, you know, got into the, you know, got done with the business and into teaching.
So tell us about where your art is right now. I know you're now working more like with fabric and things like that, and that quilt tops, I think, and a whole wide range. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I was doing embroidered pieces, which I started in 2011, and they're intensely embroidered pieces. They're only about 6 by 4 inches. I mean, it would take me 4 to 6 weeks to do one of them, and it's like with hard in my hands, and I don't know. I just started thinking about doing quilts. I thought, well, you know, I could do something that's bigger. So the quilts I'm making, even if I hand embroider them using a different technique, I can, you know, usually get one done in a lot less time it was taking to do those little embroidered pieces. So what I'm doing now is a series that about endangered animals. And so I'm using vintage quilt tops in a lot of them. And, you know, just that sort of idea of taking this fiber piece was made in the 30s or 40s and, you know, pretty much just sitting in a closet somewhere and never finished by the original person. I feel like I'm working with them in an odd sort of way. I feel this sort of kinship with the, well, I'm assuming women that made them. I love the old vintage fabrics. But the thing that kind of haunts me is that a lot of the animals that I'm portraying on these quilts, you know, weren't endangered when the quilts were made. So, you know, that sort of testament of time and passage of time, I think, is, you know, something that I like having in those quilts. So I got a grant through the Indiana Commission and bought a semi-industrial sewing machine with that. So I'm actually machine quilting a lot of the pieces, finished pieces I'm doing, which is kind of speeds them up and kind of doesn't in a way. I don't know. It's just it's a different process. So even though, yes, I have a sewing machine, I've also keep doing a lot of handwork in my, you know, pieces too.
You use the IAC on-ramp grant. Is that correct?
Yes, I did. And on-ramp is really a wonderful program, and it's basically to help artists develop as business, as entrepreneurs, and supports that. And we did an intensive 3-day weekend process. They put us up in a state lodge down in Brown County, and we worked with this woman named Elaine. Elaine was fabulous. I mean, she was just, for a CPA, she was one of the more animated and lovely, excited people, and really did a great job explaining a lot of business matters that I think artists tend to struggle with in general. And so as part of the process of doing that intensive weekend, we started putting together a grant. And so then we had actually a pretty short time to put together a grant that we could apply for up to $2,000. So it was a great opportunity for me.
I know that both Esther and I are sitting on the grant committee program, and I'm moderating this year, so I don't have to read all the grants. But poor Esther still has to read all the grants this year.
It's a very enjoyable process, though.
It is very interesting, and I think I was able to write a decent grant because I've done that too in the past. And also, it gives you an idea of what is going on. I didn't read artist grants. I read grants for arts organizations to do specific projects or artists, you know, doing projects in the park. But it was just to see all the possibilities out there and you know, ideas people are, you know, what they're working on.
It's truly humbling to see how much is going on. I just, mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel so privileged to be able to, I mean, because it wouldn't have come across my path otherwise. So I'm really grateful for the opportunity to do it.
Yeah, I agree. And you know what? And I think as an artist, it's a way of giving back too, you know, and you know, donating some time. So that's, yeah, it's an interesting experience. And I think it's great that the Indiana's, supports the arts as much as it does. So,
Laurel, let's ask you a little bit about COVID-19, how that's impacting you as an artist and just personally, and what you're looking forward to when it's over.
Oh, man. Well, I think, it's weird because some days I'm home, Ed and I are home together, and luckily we're extremely compatible, and we're both, working on our own art projects. And, oh my gosh, just having this much time to work on art is great. And then to have a time for, we have a prayer meditation every night, and that's been very centering and helps kind of let go of the fear. But, there's this invisible enemy out there, and it's always present. So, most days I'm fine with it, but I definitely have to admit I have some bad days. It's hard. There's a lot of fear and there's a lot of unknowns, not just fear.
It's all unknown.
It's all unknown. Yeah. But I also think we have the opportunity to recreate the world in ways we want to see it too. I hear a lot of people speak to that, and I think that's certainly something to consider. So I guess I'm at this point where I try to stay in the moment as much as possible. Making art is indeed a lovely way to do that. Go ahead.
It's got the new normal coming up. Hey, we got just a little less than a minute, so Laurel, just give us your final thoughts. And also, if you have any web connections, let us know what those are.
My website is laurel-izard.com. I'm also involved with a lot of fiber organizations around the country, which has been very nice because they have online presence and things I can participate in. So that's been really helpful. So I would say anybody that's interested in art, it's a great time to take online classes and do an online embroidery class through Lebesnik this summer. So, there's new opportunities, which I think is very rich.
Well, Laurel, we'd like to thank you for being on the show. That's Laurel Izard, who's a fiber artist in Michigan City and many, many other things. Thank you for coming on Art on the Air.
Thank you, Laurel.
Thank you. Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Esther, and have a lovely afternoon. Bye.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
Our next guest on Art on the Air is Edwin Shelton. He's a teacher at Marquette Catholic High School in Michigan City, but he's also an artist in his own right, doing a very unique recent artworks with mixed materials, working on several themes. Edwin, welcome to the show.
Aloha.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Esther. Thank you, Larry.
Oh, so
grateful to be here.
So glad to have you on. Well, Edwin, for our audience, tell us a little about your background, where you grew up. I always like to say how you got from where you were to where you are now.
Okay, I'll give you the haiku version. I was born outside of Richmond, Virginia in 1956. I grew up there. I flunked first grade, but I could do extra art projects for extra credit. So that kind of propelled me in an art direction through middle school, through high school. Then my art teacher said, go to college. Fortunately, the sculpture department at Virginia Commonwealth University was tremendous. So I was accepted in that program. And then eventually they said, oh, you should go to graduate school. So I ended up at University of Wisconsin-Madison in the sculpture department. And there I met Laurel. And we got married. And then we were probably to have teaching positions in colleges, but they kind of dried up. But we ended up putting together the Islin ceramic object business. And so we were blessed with 4 months in Paris as artist in residence under the temporary teaching job I had at Virginia Commonwealth University. Then we ended up moving back and continued our clay business in Woodstock, Illinois. And then we decided to go to Chicago, and we lived there for about 8 years, and we wanted to buy a house, couldn't afford anything, and then we discovered Michigan City. So we've been here 28 years. We brought our business, and then a recession in Sydney came through, wiped us out, which gave us the opportunity to reinvent ourselves. So Laurel ended up as the art teacher at Marquette, for 9 years. I had a five-year period, almost 5 years, at the Lesnick Center as the program director. And then about 4 years ago, I asked Laurel if she could retire so I could get her position at Marquette. She accepted the idea and so did the principal. So I'm thrilled to be the art teacher at Marquette.
So it's kind of interesting. And now Laurel's back at the Lesnick Center. So you've just kind of flopping between organizations, both of you.
Yeah, we did switch.
So, Edwin, tell us a little bit about your artwork. You have how it's developed, like what you started doing and what you're doing now. I know a lot of the things, I remember seeing you making a large piece that you used in a protest in Chicago of our current president, but other types of things you're doing. I know that China, tell us a little about your China trip, too.
Oh, well, one of the amazing things about Marquette Catholic High School is they established an exchange program with a middle school in China almost 10 years ago. So we've been having not only Chinese students at Marquette, but also they would have exchange teachers from China to help out the students at Marquette. So it was time when I showed up for someone from Marquette to go to China. So I met this wonderful Chinese English teacher that was at Marquette. I took her to the Art Institute with some students, and I thought, oh my gosh, she's really nice. If I decided to go to China, at least I would know one person. So when I got back, I emailed the principal and said, I would like to go to China. And so he accepted it. And so I had this amazing, life-changing experience teaching art in a middle school over 6 hours away from Beijing, in a middle school of 3,000 students for 4 weeks.
Phenomenal.
So that ended up influencing my art when I came back. So I was incorporating some Chinese characters in my pieces. I was using Google Translate because I only, I'm not very fluent in Mandarin. And then I was also like the idea of working large. So I have access to the art room at Marquette, which happens to be the former cafeteria space for the school. So I have these huge, large walls. So I'm able to fabricate really large pieces. So originally I was going, oh, wow, I really love to make big paintings or big pieces. But then I'd have to have like a moving truck and, to move any time I would want to show something. But then I got the idea, if I could roll it up, then I don't have to worry about it. So I've been working on a series of wall panels that are, it's almost like layers of fabric and different materials, including window screen and fabric and paper. And they go on the wall, and then I alter them with other materials.
Excellent. So tell us a little about some of your exhibitions that you've done. I know you've done some with Laurel also, but, recent and, over the last, period of time.
The one that I was very pleased that the Lesnick Center for the Arts allowed the area artists to have the wonderful 40th anniversary show. Laura Fosberg did an amazing job installing that work. And so Laurel and I were both in that show. What I just figured out yesterday and today, I found this website called artsteps.com. So I just finished this morning installing a virtual show in this virtual gallery space. So it's so weird to use the technology, but I just posted that, and then I've got a show coming up, a solo show coming up in January at the Winnetka Community Center, so I'm very excited about that. And then sometime between 2021 and 2022, I've been accepted for a solo exhibition at the Evanston Art Center.
Oh, so, excellent.
Yeah. So I'm very excited to be cooking with all four burners at this time.
That's great. I remember seeing your exhibit at the Chesterton Arts Center. Both you and Laurel had a joint exhibit there.
Yeah, that was a really great space, and I was really grateful to have that opportunity to do.
So what are you looking at? Go ahead.
Go ahead. I was just very grateful. There's so many supportive opportunities out here, you know, with the area artists, and Esther's got a great space. I mean, it's amazing to see Michigan City transform over since we've been here, particularly with the amount of culture.
Now, let's talk about move to teaching for a while. The COVID-19 has to definitely impact, especially art. It has to be somewhat difficult because it's such a hands-on thing and process. How's that impacting how you're teaching, you know, how you normally teach and how do you teach under the COVID-19?
Before the declaration, my schedule was AP Art History. I had a photography class, which was basically using their camera on their phone. Two 3D classes, and ceramics. So, once the stay at home, hit, then I had to regroup because the kids don't have access to the actual materials. Fortunately, Marquette, had already, adapted the iPads from about 4 years ago. So everyone, you know, had the skills for that. So basically what I've been doing is putting together online assignments. And so I use Google Classroom to send the information out. So most of the time I'm sending them to like the digital collection at the Art Institute or the digital collection at the Getty. Or, you know, different museums around the world, and then have them survey and do something with those. And then I've also have them look at videos, particularly around art history and art appreciation. So they're kind of getting more of a art appreciation, art history survey than what they originally signed up for.
Yeah, it would be difficult to do ceramics when you don't have the type of equipment you need for ceramics. You don't have that at home to.
Oh, yeah. Well, the other thing to be different is that, like the AP Art History exam, that's done by the College Board, and traditionally the students would go to Marquette, and they would have a set amount of time, and everything's on paper. So I think it was a three-hour exam. This year, the College Board, because of the pandemic, is setting up the technology so the students will be able to take a 45-minute exam at home. So that's going to be a big change. And then I have to start working on finals that the students can take at home also.
Do they have any plans in place after the summer holiday? Has anything been discussed if it goes on to the new school year?
That discussion hasn't come up yet. So, I mean, I think Marquette will be fine either way. I mean, we've got the iPads, and we'll have even more skills if we have to go online for fall, but I don't know at this time.
Edwin, what grade levels you teach? Is it middle school and high school?
No, just high school.
Okay, yeah. Middle school is a tough age to teach, I know.
I had a great time. I was at Notre Dame Catholic School for a couple of years with a really great principal, and then he put me together with Queen of All Saints. So I bounced around. So the great thing about it is the kids I had at Notre Dame and Queen of All Saints have all grown up, and now they're meeting me again at Marquette.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
Yeah, so it's been like there's one
year. There's continuity for them.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's really exciting for me because I don't, you know, Laurel and I don't have kids, so I get to watch, you know, these kids grow up. So I have one young man who's high energy, particularly at Notre Dame, and, you know, just to watch him blossom at Marquette. And so, you know, he even got so far as applying to Harvard, but he's going to Spain for college. I mean, I would add, I had a hard enough time just like going to the next college in Richmond, Virginia, much less I can't comprehend like going for my undergraduate degree, you know, in another country.
That's true. Hey, Edwin, tell us a little bit. We're just got a few minutes left here about how is this maybe COVID-19 is impacting you personally and what you're looking forward to do after it's all over.
I started a series of drawings because I didn't have access to the building over spring break. So that's this handmade paper that I made at Hook Pottery and Paper with Andrea Peterson's guidance. So I started a series of drawings, which I'm still working on. So I can sit at the kitchen table and work on those. And so I'm really excited about that. And now I've been back to Marquette. So I'm going to be cleaning up the art room, and then hopefully I'm looking forward to making larger wall panels for these upcoming shows.
Oh, excellent. And, you know, anything you're looking forward to doing for yourself?
The art making, I'm just really grateful to have that opportunity. I mean, that's the biggest gift I can give myself at this time. I feel like I don't know what switch flipped the switch. I think it was a show that I had with a bunch of people at Blick Gallery. It was like a drawing a day like 5 years ago. And it like got my pilot light going. And so now I'm just like want to make art as much as I can. So I just want to, you know, get these shows. I'm going to have like the best body of work I can put together. And I haven't had this energy. I mean, I feel like I'm back in graduate school and I'm 25. But I'm stuck in a 63-year-old body.
That's okay. It's as young as you think. Well, thank you so much for being Art in the Air. That was Edwin Shelton, art teacher, but also a great artist himself. Thanks for being on Art in the Air. And we'd like to thank our guests today for being on Art in the Air, which is heard every Friday at 11 a.m., rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m., and Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. Your hosts are Larry Breckner and Esther Golden. Thanks again to Greg Kovach, WVLP's station manager. Underwriters for Art in the Air are Valparaiso University's Brower Museum and Walt Breininger of Paragon Investments. Also, Mary Levan is our art patron supporter. Art in the Air is supported by the Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant and the National Endowment for the Arts. If you're interested in being a guest or send us information about your arts-related event, exhibit, please email us at artontheair@gmail.com. That's artontheair@gmail.com. See you right here next week, 103.1 FM and 89.1 FM, Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know. Esther and Larry, Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through art and show the world.